Well, joining me this morning to explore the findings is Associate Professor of Social Sciences from the Australian National University and Deputy Director of the ANU's Centre for Social Research Methods is Nicholas Biddle. Welcome on the show, Nick.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, how have you viewed the results delivered by the 2016 census data? Does it reflect the positive signs in the dynamic and diverse, of diversity across the broader Australian society?
Yeah, so certainly a number of the findings show that the Australian population is changing. You mentioned the increase in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population, and one of the things which I think is really interesting about that growth in the population is it's actually a fair bit higher than we would expect based on the number of births which have been recorded as occurring over the last 5 years, which that suggests is that people are becoming more comfortable and happier to identify as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander than they were in 2011, which I take as a very positive sign.
Now, housing affordability and home ownership have been central to public and government debate, particularly during the budget, which I must say to SER covered exceptionally well.
I'm sure they did.
What has the census indicated regarding these issues, and what can be taken away from the findings?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really, what the census enables us to look at is not just what's happening at the national level or what's happening at small areas. And what we find is that for many areas, the number of people who are renting as opposed to owning their own home or buying is substantially increasing. The number of people who are living in what we call a non-detached dwelling, so that might be a terrace or a townhouse or an apartment, is increasing. And in certain parts of Sydney, it's hard to find anyone living in a detached dwelling. So certainly the types of houses which we're living in is changing. The extent to which at a national level we're owning our own home is decreasing. But at the same time, there are some issues around housing affordability, and what we're seeing is that certain cities, Darwin and Sydney in particular, have been identified as having quite large levels of people who are identified as being under housing stress. So that's where they're spending more than 30% of their income on either the rent or their mortgage.
Okay, and also there's been another big part of our policy debate was the NDIS, and it's now, did the census data kind of, I suppose the reason we do the census surely in part is to understand what needs to be done and needs to be addressed for populations. And was there any insight around the National Disability Insurance Scheme, and how could this be used to inform government policy?
Yeah, so the NDIS has a very specific measure of having a disability in terms of having access to resources through the NDIS. And the census asks a slightly different question. It asks whether you have what's called a core activity need for assistance, which is whether you need help with daily tasks. So they're not directly related, but they're somewhat related. And what we found is that there was quite a large increase in the number of people between 2011 and 2016, both in absolute and percentage terms, who were reported to have a core activity need for assistance, and particularly around the youth and child population. So that's where the fastest growth was in reporting that form of disability. And what that suggests to me in terms of disability policy is A, that the discussion around the NDIS appears to make people either more aware of or more comfortable reporting their disabilities, but also that we need to make sure that we have a focus not just at the upper end of the age distribution, but also around kids at school and before school in making sure they have the resources available to them to manage those needs for assistance.
Now, of course, the idea is that the census should help in public policy formation. Do you think it's likely that a lot of these findings are going to correlate to policy reform? I mean, one statistic that I noted that I thought was incredible was that 27% of households had English was not the primary language spoken. There was a second language, maybe even third language spoken at a home. Do you think that's going to have much of an impact on the government's push to renew tougher citizenship laws that would see more stringent English testing for citizenship?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the census does have quite direct effects on policy, and your listeners might not be aware of the discussion down in Canberra about the very rapid growth in the ACT population and the potential for an additional House of Representatives seat. So that obviously voting is affected by the census. And at the broad national level, the census doesn't have as big an effect as it does at a local level. I mean, what the census is really fantastic for is identifying those national trends, yes, but also seeing what geographic areas are kind of changing faster or at a slower rate than the rest of the population. So in terms of the language spoken at home, what the census allows us to do is not only see what's happening at the national level, but also see, okay, what suburbs, what towns, what neighbourhoods are there a large number of people speaking a particular language, and therefore we can divert our resources to those areas.
Now, of course, some of our listeners will definitely remember the hashtag census fail, or census fail maybe as they know it, which was to do with the crashing of the census website when people actually tried to do it on the night of June 24. Did the temporary closure of the website actually have an impact on how the data was collected, and even more so how the result was delivered? Can we fully trust this data, given that there was quite a big blunder right at its infancy?
Yeah, I mean, I think we can trust the data. At least we can trust the data at the national level, and there needs to be a fair bit more research about the local level. But I think on balance, we can trust the data. I think there has been quite strong evidence of an effect on certain data items. So the ABS, the Bureau of Statistics, asked an independent assurance panel to look at the data, and what they found is people are a little bit less likely to give their names, a little bit less likely to give their date of birth, which is not used to analyze. We don't analyze date of birth or analyze names. What the ABS does use that information for is to link the data to other bits of information to help add information to a range of other data products. And I think that's been affected. There are more people this time around for whom we don't have a census record for. It's not large, and we always miss some people, but it's slightly larger this time. And I think the other thing is what the ABS was hoping for was a slightly higher percent of people who filled out their census online. Now, there was a large increase, but probably not quite as large as the ABS had of hoped for.
Well, Professor, it makes all for very interesting findings. I'm sure, like many people, they always enjoy hearing those really obscure statistics about, you know, oh, wow, you know, 1% of people are, now, this is a completely arbitrary number, but 1% of people are, I believe, X or Y. I always love seeing how many people identify as people who follow the Jedi religion.
Yeah, that's always interesting. And certainly my 9-year-old was tracking down the number of kids his age and what they're doing. And so I'm kind of starting off a little bit of a stats nerd in the family, but we all enjoy having a bit of a play around with the data.
Absolutely. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you very much.